I always like to start with a couple of thoughts to inspire you. And the first one comes from St. Teresa of Calcutta, who says this: let us not make a mistake. The hunger of today is for love. Feed the hungry, not only food, but also the Word of God. Give drink to the thirsty, not only water, but also peace, truth, and justice. Nurse the sick and dying, not only of body, but also of mind and spirit. The second inspiration is the recommendation of a newly released book that is entitled I Thirst, 40 Days with Mother Teresa. It's a wonderful book. As always, it is so good to be with you, and I truly enjoy what I consider to be our parish time together, as we come together as a parish family to celebrate the Holy Mass. And in a world like today that is so fragmented, it's so important to have a place where you feel a sense of being loved, a place of belonging. And that's what St. Albert the Great Parish is. This morning's gospel reading actually picks up where we left off 3 weeks ago with the inspiring story of the widow in the temple who gave her all to God. Remember the story of the widow and the two lepta coins? Now, this next episode in the life of Jesus makes such a lasting impression that Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all record it, and for our sake, thank God that they did record it, because it really fills out the picture of what we're reading in the gospel today. Now, while they were leaving the temple after this great teaching Jesus had provided on the woman who gave it all, one of the disciples looks to Jesus and he says, "Look, teacher, what massive stones, what massive buildings." Now, he was inspired, and rightfully so, because without a shadow of a doubt, the temple was awe-inspiring in terms of its scale and its magnificence. The historian Josephus, he records that the temple area literally took up a sixth of the city. That's how large that it was in the city. And that some of the marble stones measured 40 feet in length and weighed 200,000 pounds apiece. That's pretty substantial when you think about the largest stone in the pyramid is about 11,000 pounds. And the wall that was facing the Mount of Olives, it towered more than 30 stories or 300 feet tall. It was magnificent. So by every earthly standard, the temple area appeared not only to be breathtaking, but also an indestructible fortress. And so Jesus turns to the disciple and he says this: "Do you see all these great buildings? Not one stone here will be left on another. Every one will be thrown down." Now, by this point, they had reached the massive eastern gate of the temple, and as they were passing through it, they were in a state of shock. You got to be talking about something else. And as a result of that, dead silence. It was quiet after that. So as they leave the temple area, they walk about a half a mile further. They go down into the Kidron Valley, and they begin to ascend up the Mount of Olives. And when they reach the top of the mount, where the view of Jerusalem and the temple was nothing short of spectacular, Jesus, now being pensive because he was going to be crucified in 48 hours, he sits down and looks out and contemplates what is called the City of Peace. Now, you got to remember something that really sets the stage for this. Just 3 days earlier, on that day we know as Palm Sunday, while in that same exact vicinity on the Mount of Olives, Jesus literally cries. He weeps for the city, and he looks out over the city, and he says this: "If you had only known on this day what would bring you peace." That's where he was. And now we're told that James, John, Andrew, and Peter, they approach Jesus privately, and they sit down beside him as he's looking out, and they ask him a question. They say this: "Teacher, what did you mean earlier about no stone being left on another?" And at that point, Jesus begins to teach them the great discourse, which is called the Mount Olivet Discourse. Now, it is truly what Jesus is teaching at this time. It's one of the longest in the Gospels. And I'll sort of condense it a little bit. Jesus makes two major points in this discourse about the future. It's all about the future. The first one is the beginning of the end and the end of the end. That's what he's going to talk about. And the first is the beginning of the end, which would be the destruction, as he just prophesied, about Jerusalem. And if you read any history book, you know that in 40 years later, in AD 70, the soon-to-be emperor of Rome named Titus, he came into the city and he leveled it, literally. There was not one stone left upon another. And then the second point in his great discourse is the end of the end. It's sort of fast-forwarding us into the distant future where life as we know it ceases to exist. Life as you know it today, when Jesus comes, this life will cease to exist. And it will be a new life, a new way, a more glorious way. And Jesus says these words. He says to them, while the destruction of Jerusalem must occur first, the end will not come right away. That's why 2,000 years have passed, and we're still trying, we're keeping out a watchful eye for his second appearing. Whereas we heard Paul and many of the other prophets speak in the gospel, in the second reading today, everyone will see him coming in the clouds with power and great glory. See, Jesus is coming back a second time. Now, I don't know about you, but as I reflected upon this passage, I was thinking, why did the church pick this passage for the first Sunday in Advent? You know, this text seems to be more related to the second coming of Jesus. Why don't we start this week with John the Baptist rather than next Sunday? You know, he's sort of the forerunner of who Jesus is going to be. This first coming is not in glory and majesty, but it's in a little manger in Bethlehem. Why did the church do that? Well, the answer lies within the message that always surrounds Advent. Anytime you ask somebody about Advent, you'll always hear this message, and it is this: be ready to meet him when he comes. That's what Advent is, isn't it? It's preparation. It's preparing ourselves to meet Jesus when he comes. And there are certain principles of preparation that apply across the board, whether it be the first coming or the second coming. So what I want us to do is spend the remainder of our minutes together examining some general principles so that when Jesus does appear in a few short weeks and at some point in the future, we'll be ready to meet him. The first general principle of preparation for Jesus' coming is to be mindful that what has been prophesied will indeed take place. It is a guaranteed reality. Now, there's one thing that Jesus nor the prophets lacked when they prophesied about the future, and that was conviction. They always spoke with strength in the tone of their voice. And as we know, some 2,000 years later, living in the 21st century, that many, many of these prophecies have already been fulfilled. What did we hear in Jeremiah today? God says this: I will raise up for David a just shoot. Well, that just shoot is Jesus. That's God in the flesh coming to us to restore our relationship to him. That's already happened. And then we have the second prophecy today about the destruction of Jerusalem, which the disciples, they were dumbfounded. It's like, this cannot happen. But yet Jesus predicted it to happen, and guess what? It did happen. So, and I could sit here today and give you a long list of prophecies which have been foretold and have been fulfilled, and ones that have not yet been fulfilled, but foretold. And I think that's why Jesus inserts the following words right in the middle of this teaching on what's going to happen in the end of times. He says this. He says that heaven and earth will pass away. And that truly has been prophesied, because we know in Revelation that there's a new heaven and a new earth that will be created one day. He says that, but he says, but my words will never pass away. When I say something, that's it. It'll never pass away. It'll never go away. It is eternal. So we should find great confidence in that, in knowing that Jesus indeed is going to do what he said. So keep a watchful eye out for him. The second general principle of preparation for Jesus is to be mindful that we have a date with destiny. We have a date with destiny. As we learned last week, God is the Lord of everything, right? From A to Z. And God has a divine plan for history where those who have placed their trust in Jesus will one day, when he returns, go to be with him forever. Now, it seems like in our world today, it seems like we're just sort of moving around aimlessly. But never think that. Always remember that the divine hand is at work. God is at work. There are no such things as these aimless, perpetual cycles of purposelessness in our world today. No, to the contrary, history is going somewhere, and it's moving forward under the direction of God's divine hand to, as we heard last week, moving to that glorious day. Yes, that glorious day when we shall see him when he comes, and we will go to be with him forever. So remember this. Live with assurance, because God's hand is at work today. The third general principle of preparation is to be mindful to not panic. This one really caught me off guard to study. This was a real gift in preparing for this homily. This is something I hadn't thought about, but it really makes sense because the Lord says it. But what does Jesus say? If you take all three of the accounts, what does he say? He says to the people, and it's because he's always ministering to the people, he says, don't give in to the anxieties of life when all these tribulations I have referred to surround you. He says, don't droop. Don't lose heart when these things happen. And why? Because he's close. He's close. Instead, what does he say? He says, lift your heads from drooping. Lift your heads, he says for us, because rejoice, because redemption is at hand. When you see these things happening, I'm imminently close to coming back. And that's what matters, he's saying. I really like the illustration that Jesus uses to make this point. And if you've had a child, you can really relate to this very well. But Jesus describes our tribulations in life as momentary birth pains. That's what he calls them, meaning that they are merely a signal of the new life that is yet to be seen, that is about to come. It's an amazing miracle, the gift of life and the birth. And those birth pains, but once that child enters into the world, it's just joy on the face of the mother and the parents. It's a wonderful thing, and that's what Jesus is saying. So what a refreshing thing he's saying. So let us keep a watchful eye and lighten our load, not heavy our load today with everything that's going on. The final principle of preparation, although there are many, many more in this discourse, is being mindful to live a life of vigilance. That word is literally used in today's gospel reading. Now, what does it mean to be vigilant? Does vigilant mean to make sure that Jesus doesn't catch us doing something wrong when he appears? Are we afraid that he's going to say, don't ever let me catch you doing that again? No, that's not what vigilance is. But what he is encouraging us to do is to be vigilant in living a life of permanent and joyful expectation, because he is coming back to us. Vigilance means to love him and to long to see him. Vigilance means to love him and want to hear the words of Jesus said, well done, good and faithful servant. Jesus, vigilance, we love him, and we, because of that, we want to go on living our lives day in and day out with him as Lord of our lives. We love him, and we want to go on giving priority in our daily lives to our faith, to our families, and to our social responsibilities. So be vigilant. Keep a watchful eye for the coming of the Lord, and you will be filled with joyful expectation. I'd like to leave you with two thoughts for reflection this morning. First of all, the message hashtag is keep a watchful eye. Are you keeping a watchful eye at this time? Always, always be in a state of mindfulness for the first and the second coming of Jesus. And the second thing is this. Remember that Jesus is the reason for the season, right? Jesus is the reason for the season. So give strong consideration now to how you are going to keep a watchful eye over the next few weeks in order to meet Jesus, who is our life, will appear to us one day. God bless all of you.